And we are back with the Doris Davenport Show, all local, all the time, right here on WCPT 820, where facts matter. You were listening to the first half of last week's segment, and we have a wonderful guest in the studio with us today, so we are not going to waste any time at all. This lady, who is not only beautiful and not only someone who has an absolutely wonderful background. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about her. This is, you know how the ministers say you've got the right reverend, doctor, so-and-so. Well, she's got a few of those titles too, but I'm just going to give you a couple. This is Professor Dr. Sandra Adele, who is a literary professor in the Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's published numerous books, articles, and reviews on African-American literature and theater. In 2003, Sandra visited a Wisconsin casino and very quickly became addicted to slot machine gambling. Now, before you all clutch your pearls and bat your lashes, I know that some of you have been in that very situation where you have either been on a cruise or been on vacation or walked to down a boardwalk, and or, you know, this is Illinois, so you could go to the airport probably or any backroom bar and find a slot machine of some kind. And you've been tempted. Come on now. You went a little bit and you want to get in that pocket and let that money just burn a hole. So we've got Dr. Adele here in the studio with us today. She's going to talk with us about some of those stories she chronicled in her memoir, Confessions of a Slot Machine Queen, that she published in 2010. And by the way, it's the first nonfiction narrative by an African-American woman to provide insights into the impact that casino gambling is having on the African-American community, and particularly on Black women. Now, let me say that Elizabeth Thielen is in the studio with us today, too. You guys will remember her from the March 3rd segment. And we talked a lot about this, and Elizabeth has her own background. And I told Elizabeth, and I'm telling you, Dr. Adele, we have to do this again when we have more time to really dig deep. Because I want to talk about some of these issues. And every week we have teased the subject of talking about why the Black community is so much more impacted than most other communities. When I think about the writing and teaching that you do, can you talk to us a little bit about some of the critical intersections between African-American literature and theater, and the discourse on gambling, particularly online gambling or gaming?
Oh, boy. Thank you. Let me say at the outset that one of the things that I'm actually struggling with as a writer is precisely that connection between myself as a literary scholar and writing about gambling addiction, and particularly this time around, other women's narratives. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so one of the things that I'm working with is trying to mute my voice, because I've already told my story in Confessions of a Slot Machine Queen, and bring in, wrap some of the things that I was not able to address in the first book, because I was actually in a lot of stress and crisis when I was writing that. And I tell people, when you're in crisis, you probably shouldn't write your memoir. but the other part then is merging these two things. So I say at the outset in this new book that's called And Then the Casinos Came, Black Women's Narratives of Gambling, Addiction and Recovery, that what I'm doing is autoethnography. Mm-hmm. That is, I'm telling part of my story, some of my story, but I'm weaving that story into these other women's stories and what little bit of research I can find. Mm-hmm. And there's almost none on gambling in the Black community. And what I'm trying to do with some of the two or three quantitative studies that I can find is put this in ordinary language. Mm-hmm. There is a tremendous need for some of the women who are contacting me and Elizabeth about their gambling addiction. They want to sit down and read something. They want to know that there are other women out here who are struggling with the same issue. You know, and so that's the challenge. And you mentioned theater, because I'm also trying to figure out, how do I make this a solo show? with my story and then some of these other voices. And one of my friends had said, Sandy, you've got a solo show here and I can help you write it and I will direct you in it. And that's not going to happen. I want to write it, but have somebody else do it, because mm-hmm. there's a point where you have to let the story go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I don't feel strong enough, even though I've given talks all over the place. I don't know that I want to put this on a stage and mm-hmm. be in the center of it. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing for me right now is really allowing these other women's authentic voices come through so that mm-hmm. they're telling their stories as a first-person narrative, which makes it very different from the kind of case studies that people would do. These are not case studies. These are women who've shared their stories with mm-hmm. me, and I'm trying to shape it into a narrative. Your narratives have to have an arc, but as a scholar, I have to have chapters and some footnotes and things, too. So that's the big challenge in terms of the art, the connecting. My background as a literary scholar, my interest in what little bit of theater I've done with this big project.
So when you look at some of these narratives that have that you've come across that you're writing about, what resonates, I'm sure, are the dynamics of gambling and the risk associated mm-hmm. with gambling, right? So when you look at these narratives and reflect on the complexities of addiction, can you talk to us about the impact that these vices have on these specific communities and the individual identity? What are some of those socioeconomic factors?
Well, first of all, if you look at where the casinos are, they're put in communities where you have some economic issues, and that's supposed to raise, new revenue.
Well, that used to be the case. I mean, here in Chicago, what we're finding is we've got a big Bally's right in smack dab in the middle of downtown. J.B. Pritzker, as you've written about it,
yes.
Passed the bill where we can now put slot machines in the airport.
Right.
But yes.
So the impact on these
communities,
mm-hmm. communities of color, is going to be tremendous because these places are very close proximity mm-hmm. To us. If you don't have a car, you can take the train mm-hmm. to get up to the new one that's going to be built, or the one that we have now, and to put them in the casinos, into the airports. It's like, really, folks, we're not Las Vegas, mm-hmm. And so the other part of it is that you have different groups of people who are gambling. Some of these people really are desperately trying to get out of an economic problem. Mm-hmm. That's the bailout. Well, if I can just hit this, this machine, if this machine just gives me $500, I can pay a bill, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or if, I just need to get out of my debt. The cycle that somebody talked about last time, there's that spiraling mm-hmm. into debt and chasing the losses. So you've got a couple of groups. You've got the folks who just really, really need to, they see this as their only way to get out of a situation. They might have to pay a bill or something mm-hmm. like that. Then you have other folks who are going in for pleasure, because it's, the gambling is being promoted as pleasurable entertainment, and get caught because they don't understand the makings of the machines, mm-hmm. how they work, how they operate. The social, and one of the things I want to point out is I'm from Detroit mm-hmm. Originally. Detroit has three huge casinos within 2.5 miles of each other, because I measured it. And what's in the city? There are poor people.
Yeah.
And so what the idea was to make that the gambling mecca of the Midwest, but these casinos are in close proximity to neighborhoods, to people who can easily get to them. And so the fallout is tremendous, but the problem is, and you've talked about this over the month that, you've been giving these, having these conversations, is that it's a silent addiction. Most people don't know what's happening mm-hmm. until it's too late. Mm-hmm. And we're underreported, and this is a crucial thing, and this is one of the things that I don't know if you're ready to weigh in on it, but we have to be ready, prepared to deal with the fallout that's already happening mm-hmm. with addictions, and what's going to continue to happen with the sports betting and iGaming if that mm-hmm. goes, if that happens. Among the other things that you talked about last time were the limited numbers of people of color who are professionals who are trained to deal with us, and the importance of us having mm-hmm. somebody who looks like us.
Yes.
Because once we start this therapeutic session, and we need to do that, all of this other stuff opens up.
Mm-hmm. That's
all
right.
of these other things.
Yeah, because it's real. I mean, yes, there is the side of it where people look at it just for the entertainment factor. But, you know, when we hear stories about the price of medication and how it's escalating and housing and how difficult it is for people to get into a first-time homeowner situation, mm-hmm. people have real economic issues
right.
that they're looking for they're looking for solutions yeah. to. And we don't hear enough about them, Elizabeth.
Right.
What do you think we can do or how can we highlight this issue of needing to hear more about these problems?
Well, you know, this show, the books that Dr. Adele writes, and Dr. Adele has done some fantastic community, you know, awareness events, is so important because we have over 380,000 Illinoisans with gambling disorder, the full-blown gambling addiction, and twice that at risk. Mm-hmm. So all of those people, over 750,000 adult Illinoisans who are gambling in an at-risk way, who are on their way to gambling addiction. And like Sandy said, and you said, nobody's talking about it. Mm. People need to talk about it so that we can recognize that when you turn to gambling as a means of income, mm-hmm. that's not, it's a form of recreation, and people lose more than they win. Mm-hmm. That's why it is a lucrative industry for the gaming industry. So people might turn to gambling for entertainment, but they're staying with it often for reasons that end up hurting them. So mm-hmm. we need to talk about it. We need to help people come to care earlier. And like Sandy said, where is that care and what's going to happen when they reach out? You know, calling 1-800-GAMBLER is really important because it's 24/7 and hopefully get people connected with counseling and support in their area.
You know, something else I don't think we talk enough about is the psychological and technological mechanisms of slot machines that contribute to addiction. You know, when I think about this whole subject, I want to talk about effective prevention strategies and treatment options, and really to highlight the role of education mm-hmm. and policy in mitigating some of this problem, gambling. Given your emphasis, Dr. Adele, on the importance of understanding how slot machines operate, can you elaborate on these, some of the key aspects that both potential gamblers and policymakers should be aware of to prevent and even treat gambling addiction effectively?
Yeah, I think first of all, folks should know that 70% of the revenue that comes from casino gambling is from slot machines.
Mm.
And so the...
And we think that's the most innocent one.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that for me now at this point, if I could help folks understand how they work, that is, you've got these little paybacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that reward system that happens. You know, oh, I put in $20 and I got $75 back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm going to play some more and get some more money. Mm-hmm. There's stuff that's happening in the brain. You know, for those of us who fall prey to this, and prey is what I'm saying here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in order to help with awareness, because so many people are unaware. That's part of my goal. And then I can't do it right now because, you know, in this conversation, because I'm writing about it in the book, and I have a chapter called Those Chiming Slot Machines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based, what I've done is a summary of a work by a woman named Natasha Schull, who spent years, maybe a decade or more, interviewing people in Las Vegas who make the machines, and she talks about all of the things that go into the casino space and how it's designed to rid us of our money and our good sense. You know, what I'm talking about now are the lights, the patterns on the floor, the ceiling, everything, the ambience. Why are there no windows? Why are there no clocks? And then the rows and rows of machines. They're very strategically laid out so that anytime you go into a casino, you have to wade your way into one of these places. You have to wade your way through all of these rows and rows of slot machines. I call it the labyrinth. For me, it was a hell.
and the labyrinth. Mm-hmm. So I'm going down like Dante's Inferno kind of thing. I think having people get some understanding of that might help them be a little more aware of all of those rows of, buttons and things and lines and so forth. Mm-hmm. For example, if you think about the penny machine, there is no such thing as a penny machine. You're not playing pennies. You're playing dollars and lots of them if you don't hit the right, buttons. Mm-hmm. I think they need to also understand how seductive these machines are, especially the one in Waukegan. That's the one I've been talking about because that's the last casino that I went into, and I don't gamble. I went into that place last Labor Day, just to look at the machines. Mm-hmm. They're towers. They're huge. Mm-hmm. And they're very, very interactive. And folks need to understand that. You're going into a place that is designed to rob you of your money. I'm not, I can't say it any other way. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful about that. And so some of the other things I'm concerned about, though, is that, casinos market very heavily to the elderly, to the disabled, mm-hmm. especially during the daytime. And so my question, and one of the things I say, rather, to folks is, grandma has not shown up for a while and she doesn't have any money all of a sudden. Find out what she's doing. Mm. She is not in the bingo hall. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so those are some things to be attentive to the older people because we can't do anything about this now. In terms of policy, I really feel that, and there was something, somebody said something, I missed it last time, about policymakers speaking out. Mm-hmm. We need to have more policymakers speaking out, and we need to have more policymakers be more informed, especially as iGaming is beginning to spread the country. Six states have already, have bills before. I think they've already legalized iGaming. And what I'm talking about there are putting casino games on phones. We already have sports betting in what, about 38 states. And that's another whole story that you all talked about last time. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to cover that because I also want to focus the attention on black women because we're underrepresented. We're not in the numbers. And there are reasons for that. Mm-hmm. There's so much shame associated with this. There's shame associated with all kinds of addictions, as Elizabeth and I were talking about earlier. But particularly for those of us who are black women who are in professions, and all of a sudden we're supposed to know better. Mm-hmm. We should know that the odds are against us. And then we fall prey to this, and we can't talk about it because we can't even find each other. Mm. And that's huge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The women that I finally met through Elizabeth, at an event that I went to, someone else who worked with her gave me the name of one person, one woman. Mm-hmm. That's how I found the other women.
Wow.
And it's because they were online during the pandemic, and they could see other black women. And so one woman began to connect with others. Mm-hmm. But I also am seeing the fragility of these kinds of groups when people come together as a group to have these discussions, and we're not. Mm-hmm. We're not experts. We're not professionals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's just what's happening now with us is that we have a common cause. Mm-hmm. We have a common, problem, and that is with gambling addiction. Yeah. When I was going through this, and it was actually in 2005 when I first went into a casino and started looking for other people to talk to about because I didn't understand what was happening to me, I found nothing. Mm. Online. I'm doing deep research. I couldn't find nothing. Could not find any other black women, but I knew they were somewhere. Where are they? And then the other problem is speaking out publicly, especially if we have, in our professions, people look at us a certain way. It's like, oh, you're a gambler? Even though it's legal, think about this. We don't want that title. Mm-hmm. We don't want that label. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answered a little bit.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that when we talk about the African American community and how, we know gambling is a popular activity for people from every background, doesn't matter what your race identity is. But there are higher rates of problematic gambling that have been reported in the African-American community. And we have to shine that light. I'm committed to shining that light for obvious reasons, because there's a lot of risk of experiencing these harms. And when I think about the prevalence of gambling in the African-American community, I can't help but think about the lack of available, as you spoke to earlier, research that is available, mm-hmm. and education. This is why I appreciate Anita Pandur, mm-hmm. executive director of Way Back In, sponsor mm-hmm. of all of our gambling segments mm-hmm. here on the Doris Davenport Show, mm-hmm. because she does reach out. She wants everyone to know that it's not just Way Back In who's doing this work. It's not just Anita Pandur, but there are so many of you out here on the landscape. I shouldn't say so many of you, because I don't think there are so many.
We're not many.
But it is important that people know that you're here, Elizabeth and mm-hmm. Dr. Adele, and that you are interested in letting everybody know about the research and education that's available to people. So when we think about research, let's look forward, look ahead. What's missing in addition to some of the things that you talked about? I know for me, one of the things that I think about that's missing when I hear you talk about the bright colors and the geometric patterns on the floor, I think about all of the conversation about how we sell and market things that are attractive to children. Mm-hmm. Marketers and manufacturers understand the science and psychology mm-hmm. around the decision-making of the human brain. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a mistake that these very decisions are being made from a design perspective mm-hmm. to attract very specific demographics of people. Talk to me about that kind of research and education,
and again,
lack thereof.
And again, the my go-to book, and it's the only one that's so detailed, is Natasha Schull's a book titled Addiction by Design.
Mm.
And
interesting.
She published this in 2013. Mm-hmm. And so when I was talking to you about the machines today, these machines are much more interactive now. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of other things to consider, and I have not figured out how to work that out. And that Harvard University has a Center for Gambling Research, mm. and it's funded by the International Gaming Technology and the American Gaming Association. And so I guess it's legitimate to do this kind of work, mm-hmm. but they're doing research on the brain and so forth. Now, with Natasha Schull, she shows, she talks about the layout. She also talks about some of the technologies that are used beyond that, sky, mm-hmm. that eye in the sky, where the people who do the design can see what flow of traffic it is, mm-hmm. How long people are staying on machines. One of the things that I was surprised about when I went to Waukegan to that, tent that's a casino, is that Some of the machines have a cap of $30,000 for, a jackpot. Mm-hmm, the purpose mm-hmm. of that is that those are low jackpots, and they're calibrated or designed to keep the people sitting in their seats. And mm. so she talks about everything, including the chairs the way they're mm-hmm. they're built and designed. It's to make you very, very comfortable mm-hmm. in the seats. Even where you push the buttons. You push mm-hmm. the button here. Remember, we don't have the arm anymore because mm-hmm. that takes too much time. So tap, 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 mm-hmm. tap. I shouldn't be tapping with it. I just realized this is a mic.
Yeah.
but it, this is, all it's by design, and she talks mm-hmm. about that. Natasha Schull does, and she talks about how when she interviewed some of the designers, they used phrases like "play to extinction." That's what the mm-hmm. hip machine designers are doing. Now, these are not evil people, because they've been hired to do a job, and their job is to make the fastest, most interactive machines, and culturally mm-hmm. specific, because the Chinese have their own people making mm-hmm, those machines mm-hmm. and so forth. So it's a big global industry. But the point is that the research that's being done now, how does that filter back? That's my question. How mm-hmm. does that get back to the designers? Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side of things, in terms of prevention and treatment, we're looking at the problem. The problem is us. I have a weakness, or mm-hmm. I got some trauma in my life, and that's why I'm going to the casino to escape. Because a lot of these women say they're escaping. They're escaping into the space of the casino mm-hmm. and in front of that slot machine. But I want to look at the product, mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. That chapter titled, and chiming slot machines, is breaking down what Natasha Schull does mm-hmm. in ordinary language, like in five pages mm-hmm. instead of, you know, 300 pages. Mm-hmm. And to provide that information, because people are going to be surprised. It's like, oh, I didn't think about that. I didn't know that about these machines mm-hmm. before I sat in front of them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're, mm-hmm. you know, and so that, again, is for me, prevention. One way to prevent some of the stuff that's happening, some of the, you know, continuing numbers of people becoming addicted is to be aware of how that machine works. I want to point to another thing on your March 10th show. There was a young woman named Lyra?
Lyric.
Oh, it's mm-hmm. like Lyric Theater.
Yes.
Okay. Porter. And that she was important. I paid very close attention to her because her work, and it's really interesting that you have young people coming into mm-hmm. this and getting trained, because the people that are going to be attracted to her, mm-hmm. She understands where they live, and they yes. live on these devices, right?
That's right.
And so when they come to her, there's going to be, I'm hoping, a closer relationship than coming to me. It's like, okay, grandma's here, mm-hmm. and, you know, that judgmental part
yes,
of it, you know?
Yes.
So we need this. She's a very young woman working with this organization. Mm-hmm. She understands that social media is where they live. And she also said that her mother mm-hmm. was dealing with addiction. So we, you know, the mere fact, Ms. Doris Davenport, that you're having this conversation with us here mm-hmm. is a huge step in terms of, you know, addressing our Black community. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about it. I'm happy about it, because for over 10 years, I have been the mm-hmm. voice of Black women in gambling addiction. And sometimes I'm getting better with it, but sometimes, you know, every time I step out and tell the story, I'm mm-hmm. vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're taking off your clothes.
But vulnerable in what respect?
Just still that whole thing about, you know, my own background mm-hmm. as an unwed teen mother. It's like, see, you know, she's made it all the way up here. Mm-hmm. But look, see, she still has this problem. Because mm-hmm. we still, in my head, it's not legal to me.
Right.
You know,
right.
I've made it. So mm-hmm. why would I start, you know, doing something that's going to tear everything in my life apart?
Mm-hmm. Because we're human and we are susceptible to temptation. I mean, that's just what it is. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I want to bring up some of the barriers to treatment, because no matter how you slice it, when I think about, again, you know, I talk about our community and the psychological aspects of it. I'm going to keep going back to that because I'm on the hunt now. You know, Anita had, who knew that I would get so interested in gambling disorders, right? But this is Anita's fault. she's doing such a great job. But really, because I'm just absolutely amazed at how and why it impacts Black communities so much. And I think about a couple of studies that I am aware of. In 2011, there was a study by Barry et al. Mm-hmm. That compared a nationally representative sample of over 32,000 Black and white adults in America on measures of gambling behavior problem, gambling mental health, and the co-occurrence of mental disorders mm-hmm. in gambling. And what they found were that Black respondents were more likely than white respondents to have exhibited problem gambling behaviors in the last year of that year. Higher proportion of Black problem gamblers compared with white problem gamblers were women, 49% versus 32%. And then there were heightened rates of anxiety, mm-hmm. mood, and substance abuse and personality disorders among Black and white problem gamblers, both. Mm-hmm. However, Black respondents were more likely than white respondents to have a stronger relationship with subsyndromal gambling, mood disorders, and substance use disorders. And there were a couple of other studies that were done too. And I'm very interested in the studies that are being conducted on the differences in impulsivity mm-hmm. and compulsivity between Blacks and whites. But even more importantly, there are barriers to the types of mental health treatment that will help African Americans, particularly, to overcome these problems. And I just want to list them and get both of your initial feedback. There's the cost of treatment. There's distrust of the healthcare system. There's cultural stigma, familial shame, lack of culturally competent providers, mm-hmm. lack of psychiatrists from diverse backgrounds, physician-patient communication, and then negative experiences.
Absolutely. I would love to start, if you don't mind.
Sure, sure. We've got about 2 minutes.
I've been seeing too much of this lately. When people finally ask for help, it needs to be right. It needs to be correct. It needs to be culturally competent. And it needs to be skillful. Many people go to a therapist that they might find through, whether it's they look online, they go through their insurance if they have it. And a lot of therapists have this thought, an addiction is an addiction is an addiction. And it's not. Gambling is very unique. And if somebody makes that step and they make themselves vulnerable to ask for help, and that help is not, you know, specifically trained in this disorder, a lot of harm can be done. And that may be the last time that that person asks for help. So we need people to get to the help that is very skillful and that is very specialized through something like the 1-800-GAMBLER helpline or going to areyoureallywinning.com. But I also want to mention that female gamblers tend to gamble in isolation, and we have so much more shame than our male counterparts. So we're already have the deck stacked against us. And so we really need people to reach out in the right way through the helpline and get to skillful help.
Yeah. This will be your closing statement.
She's summarized it, and Doris, you did it. I don't have anything to add because you're right on target with that. My own experience was very difficult because I live in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a senior professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and it was really hard to talk to some of the white folks that I had there that were available, but I needed to do something. And there's a point where you just grab what other help you can get when you're falling off the cliff. So that's all I have to say on that.
Folks who are listening, when you can't stop betting nonstop, and gambling is affecting your relationships, your job, and more, are you really winning? This is Problem Gambling Awareness Month, and we want you to know you are not alone. You can get help by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. Know the signs of problem gambling by visiting areyoureallywinning.com. This is Doris Davenport, and this is the Doris Davenport Show, all local, all the time. We have spent the last month talking about problem gambling. We're here with Elizabeth Thielen and Dr. Sandra Adell. We'll be back with you again soon. Thanks so much for joining us.